That's looking like it. Good evening, folks. Welcome to the first ever Trinity Tim's live show. So we've been on the go since the end of December. We're up to about 900 subscribers, so that's good going. And for anyone that's not subscribed yet, please do so. And so if you can subscribe, if you can like, if you can comment, and when you do subscribe, if you can click on the bell, that'll give you notifications and you'll have the treat, the pleasure of listening to us three most Sunday evenings. So initially, there's some comments that we were the I Am Jollies. That was through January, I think, when the transfer market was pretty bleak and things weren't looking too good, with a Norwegian influencer suggesting that we smile more. And funnily enough, we've been smiling quite a lot recently. The best smiles ever was 3 weeks ago when we recorded soon after Queen's Park had recorded their famous victory at Ibrox. But we're still smiling from that one. And not only have Queen's Park made us smile, so have St Mirren and Motherwell. And also Celtic have made us smile a fair bit as well. Now, last week we've had 2 5-goal victories. Not quite the greatest of performances, but not too bad, not too shabby when you can score 5 goals and you're far from your best. So it's been interesting times. I really should have introduced them. It shows how unprofessional I am. Thank you, Anthony Love. Hail, hail. Thanks from Poland. So that's the first reaction to a comment. So on one side, and I'm not sure if it's left or right, depending on looking at the camera or the screen. On my right-hand side, we've got Eric Knott, the brains behind Reed Celtic. Eric's over in the south coast of Ireland in Kerry, and he's pretty prolific these days on the blogging front. My name's Joe McHugh from Video Celts. I've been doing it for quite a few years. And also we've got James Forrest from the Celtic blog. James likes to rattle off articles running to 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 words and more. So if you're ever going on a long journey, make sure you tune in to James's Celtic blog and you'll have plenty of reading material. My stuff tends to be a bit more short and sweet. That's enough of this intro. I'll pass over to Eric for your take on St Mirren 2, Celtic 5, Saturday evening.
Well, good evening, folks, and welcome to our online viewers. 13 in total of what we have now. So we have Tam Mack, Tommy 55, and Anthony Love have all passed comments so far. So I'm sure this is the beginning of some great things and a lot more numbers to come in the future. But yeah, on yesterday's game, it was a fantastic performance, absolutely fantastic performance from start to finish. But what I would say is that St Mirren really did put it up to us in the first half. They were up for the fight, and I did a piece on it today where I said that Stephen Robinson is definitely the master of the counter-attack. When you consider that they had 14 shots on goal, or 14 shots and attempts on goal, and 7 on target, that really does show, you know, that they know how to master the counter-attack when they only had 24% of possession. So credit to St Mirren for their performance as well and for making the game what it was. And I also stated in my article that St Mirren, you know, they're a really good side when you take into consideration they've beaten the Ibrox side home and away already this season, which is better than what we've done. So Stephen Robinson is doing a very good job with them. But to the game itself, overall, I think a couple of things that we really, really, really did learn out of the game is that more and more we have to take seriously, you know, signing Jeffrey Schlupp on a permanent role, because he has really slotted into that left-back role seamlessly. It's been excellent. And he had probably, outside of the Bayern Munich game, he probably had what we could consider his best game in a Celtic shirt so far as I'm concerned, topped off with a goal as well. And finished with that beautiful cross that he sent across the Yang for the fifth. You know, so I think definitely the board, and I'm sure Rodgers is already poking them about it, they need to get into action and get Jeffrey Schlupp signed up on a full-time gig, because, okay, Kieran Tierney is coming next season, but he will be a fantastic backup. And it's like I've said that while he'll make a fantastic backup, he's also a utility player. He can play central mid, he can play left winger, and he's been known to play striker as well. So fantastic addition to the team. There's no two ways about it, and he really showed that last night. But I mean, we five-star boys, that's pretty much what we could say last night. They were all excellent across the board. And Joe, we've been saying it for some time, is there a player there in Yang? And Joe has kind of said no. What's your opinion today, Joe? Would you say there is a player in Yang?
There might be a super sub in Yang, but there's still a long way to go before he's at the levels of Kun, Jota or Maeda. That's the levels we're at now for wingers. So there's a long way. He's contributing now. Yep, he came on. I'm not too sure he's done that much in the games he started, but coming off the bench, it's useful. Having good wingers is very important. We missed James Forrest for quite a while. The other James Forrest, that is. We missed him for quite a while. Yang appears to be taking on that role as the impact winger. He's not got the defensive ability of James Forrest. He's not got the know-how or experience. I'm not looking for that. But he's probably got more on James Forrest coming on as an attacking threat to sub. So it's good to have an addition to the squad. So that's all very welcome. The squad is very thin. We knew that from Bayern Munich and other matches. Without Forrest, without Bernardo, it's getting down to about 14/15 players. So Schlupp is certainly making a very strong case. I think it'll be tricky financially. At 32, he's in a fantastic position. He's got great experience. The Celtic experience isn't going to do him any harm. I'm sure he could get a championship club in England quite happily, that he could get 25, 30 games. If he's at Crystal Palace, he's probably in the London area. There's a lot of options in and around London. But hopefully, there might be a bit of the Joe Hart, the Peter, the Kasper Schmeichel about it. And he says, I quite fancy it up there. I've not won too much in my career. There might be a chance of a bit of glory, some Champions League football. And that might be better for me than a couple of seasons in the Championship closer to home. So we'll find out in due course. We've kept them quiet so far. James, what was your take on the Yang show, or St Mirren 2, Celtic 5, as other people would call it?
Well, I mean, this answers the elite manager question about Rodgers' gate again, as if it needs to be answered again and again. This is what elite managers do. They make players better players. I said in a piece last week that there is a truism in publishing that you can turn a bad book into a good book, but no good editor can ever turn a good book into a great book. Well, in football, you can turn good players into great players, but obviously you cannot turn a great player into a world-class player, no matter how much good coaching there is. But Rodgers has a long history of making good players into great players, and I think we've seen it with Matt O'Reilly, and it's a shame that he's having such a bad time down in Brighton at the moment. He didn't even make the bench today, which was a terrible situation for him to be in. But Rodgers has gave him a career. Rodgers has made him as a player. And he spotted something in Luke McKown that none of the rest of us would have seen. Because although McKown was doing reasonably well as a Dundee player, I really didn't expect him to step up and look like a Celtic player. In the manner that he has, and it's been transformational for him as well. But Yang is the biggest surprise, that Rodgers saw something there when none of the rest of us did. And I mean, I've gone up and down on Yang. I've done the whole gamut of opinion on Yang. There was a point last season, just before he got sent off at Tynecastle, where I thought he was really starting to look like a player and really starting to come into a good game. And then it got derailed by the Tynecastle scandal. And he fell off again. His levels fell off again. And I really thought that it was just, I thought he was one of those guys that if he didn't go in this window out on loan somewhere, that he would certainly go in the summer. But Rodgers sees something that the rest of us don't see. And Rodgers knows how to get the best out of this guy. I mean, Rodgers said only a couple of weeks ago that he needs to start adding goals to his game. And lo and behold, the goals are coming now. No, so whatever Rodgers and the coaching staff are doing with this guy, it's working. There is a player there. You can see there's a player there. It's just how good a player is what remains to be seen, and whether Rodgers can make a good player a great player. But he's done it before. And, you know, I'm willing to trust the manager on that. But yeah, Yang surprised the hell out of me yesterday. I thought it was outstanding. I thought McKellen was outstanding. The substitutions were all outstanding. It was Rodgers at his best, making the changes when they were needed, and they turned the game. But St Mirren gave us one heck of a match, just the same as Hibs did a couple of weeks ago. And they were excellent today against Hearts, and they're going to be a really tricky opponent in a week's time. They're really going to be tough. We're going to be on our best to get through against them. But yesterday was just excellent from us. We responded properly to setbacks, and we got on with it. And the performance in the second half in particular was excellent, and the subs were excellent. And yeah, Yang. Yang may not have been the man of the match, but he's the guy everybody's talking about. But Rodgers should get the credit for that as well, because it's Rodgers who's spotted the player and is now polishing him into a proper gem. So we'll see what happens. I'm hopeful, but I thought it was really excellent yesterday.
One player that possibly divides opinion and has been well discussed in this blog previously is Rio Hatate. Well, St Mirren were on top. Well, St Mirren were very agricultural. Well, St Mirren were physical. It looked as if the game was passing him by. The game did pass him by. Not much was coming off. He wasn't getting much time in the ball. He wasn't getting many options. I think most folk would have him getting substituted for Callum McGregor. McGregor's got a minor calf issue. When you were talking about Yang sending off, and reminding myself, it was exactly a year ago we were all going nuts at the John Beaton and Don Robertson show at Tynecastle. That was on the, it was the 1st or 2nd of March, maybe the 3rd of March, but this weekend, the first weekend in March last year. So Hatate, once the substitutions were made and Hatate survived the cut, he was flying, absolutely flying, putting a great cross for Yang. I mean, if you'd said after any point in the first hour that Hatate was going to put in a cross for Yang to head Celtic in front, you might have got laughed at. So I think Pat Bonner was raving about Hatate. He'd a good last half hour, but I'm not being an I am jolly, but I don't think he did too much constructive in the first hour. So what was your take, Eric, on Rio Hatate and Paisley?
I think he was quiet by his standards in that he didn't mess up too much, you know, because we all know that, like, with Hatate, there's a chance that he's going to be easily dispossessed, or he's going to send a stray pass, or he's going to mess, you know, a chance up when he's in front of goal. But he didn't seem to do that yesterday. He seemed to just be his industrious self in midfield. His passes were coming off. His movement was good. Definitely can't flaw him for the ball that he put in for Yang's first goal. That was a beauty of a ball that he lifted over the St Mirren defence and onto the head of Yang. Obviously, as I kind of said today, Yang's head muscles were really good yesterday, or neck muscles were really good in terms of the way he scored both of those headers. But yeah, I mean, he definitely had one of his better games, I would say, yesterday. There wasn't those kind of mistakes that he's prone to in his locker yesterday. He seemed, I don't know if you guys noticed it, but I think he definitely was more solid. And I think it just depends what Rio Hatate you get on the day. You know, some days you can get Rio Hatate who's absolutely just on fire, you know, and you can't touch him. And then other days, he's just not at the races. He's getting dispossessed every second. Every ball that he's kicking is either too short or too long. Every shot that he's trying to attempt to take is too late. But yesterday, he just seemed to be there. He seemed to be right. He seemed to be able to do his job in the position that he was in. And look, he contributed. He assisted for one of the goals. And I thought he had a decent game overall. That's my view on it.
James, the Hatate verdict from the Celtic blog.
Yeah, he was one of the players that was transformed by the substitutions. As you say, it was a real shock to see McGregor's name coming up. Coming off, and you know, everybody would have took Hatate off. But again, this is Rodgers messing with our minds a wee bit. And I thought that after the substitutions were made, he really came into the game and he ran the whole show. I thought he was brilliant yesterday in the last half an hour of that game. I thought it was excellent. But, you know, we've gone round and round on Hatate so much. He's capable of moments of absolute madness. You just cannot figure out what the hell that is he's doing. And then he can produce something magical that nobody else in the team could do. But, I mean, that's the beauty, having a player like that in the team. His unpredictability works both ways. But Rodgers has turned him into a much more hard-working player and a much more aggressive player. And again, this was another one that Rodgers sat down at the start of the season and said, you're not going to play for me much unless you start developing certain areas of your game. And he's done that. And to be fair, he's done that. They've all done it under Rodgers. They've all knuckled down and they've all taken their game to the next level. Hatate's excellent to watch when he's on his game. There are a few better players in Scotland. And for the last half hour yesterday, he was very, very, very much on his game.
Yeah, the Flying Haggis has made a comment there. He says Hatate is 2 or 8 out of 10. He's all right and Ken to sell, sell, sell. Mm. I think Brendan Rodgers is probably the manager who will make him a solid 6 to 7 out of 10 on average, eventually.
In his dreams, Ryan Kent is real Hatate. Never in a million years.
But correct.
Before we wrap up in St. Mirren, the youngest player in the Celtic team, he is absolutely outstanding. We've discussed him many times. We also discussed him playing in the Callum McGregor role. Arne Engels, outstanding.
Yep.
He put away a penalty. There was a fair old delay on it. He put it almost straight down the middle and gave the keeper the eyes. I don't think too many keepers should try winding up Arne Engels, but that was a fantastic game. A grotty stadium, a grotty surface, grotty opponents, and he was absolutely outstanding. So I don't think we're going to see more than 2 seasons out of Arne Engels. So it's genuinely enjoy him while we can. Hopefully there's no interest in Celtic in selling him this summer, but he could be someone, fingers crossed, we get through this Champions League playoff. If we're in the Champions League next season, he could be making quite a serious impact. He laid down a decent marker this season, and there's so much going for that guy. I think he tends to get transfers at the right time. He left Bruges for Augsburg, and a young guy going into the German Bundesliga, moving to a new country, and he made his mark there. 18 months at Augsburg, and then he comes over to Celtic just as the Champions League format's changing, just as Celtic's fortunes are picking up, just as we got a reasonable group, a reasonable set of fixtures, and he made a good impact. So there's so much going for Arne Engels. I don't think he'll have a Celtic testimonial. Hopefully we get to enjoy at least one more season. If we get more than 2 seasons out of him, we'll be doing pretty well. But before the match yesterday, there was a little bit of a distraction on the go. So there's another revolution on the go across the city. We've all seen many revolutions in the last 4, 5, 6 years. We've all seen the graphic, the new manager Bounce getting off to a stunning victory, blah, yep, blah, blah, beaten by Celtic, bouncing back, blame Tav, blame Goldson. Can't blame Goldson anymore. But over the last week, I think when we went on live last week, Clement was on. We didn't go live when we recorded last week. Clement was on his way out, and there was some bonkers rumours that Barry Ferguson was going to take over as manager. It just seemed too nutty to be true. But not only did Barry Ferguson take over as manager, he brought in some of his pals. He raided Sports Scene, he raided BBC, not for Tom English, not for Kenny McIntyre. He brought in Neil McCann and Billy Dodds, and topping it all off, taking off the golf course or the pub or wherever else he's been for the last 18 months or so, Alan McGregor is goalkeeping coach. Apparently, he's never been in a coaching course in his puff, but he's now in charge of goalkeeping. And we saw that video clip of how happy they all were at training. McGregor was taking the goalkeeping coaches for keep you up. So I'm sure there's some method in his madness. So it's been a mad week across the city, Eric. You've been looking on from afar. It's another subject that keeps us all smiling. What's been your take on, they used to say there's a new manager bounce. I read on Kerrydale Street, somebody described it as a new manager splat. So Barry Ferguson, Brogues, Blazer, and the rest absolutely, of it. But Barry fell right in his face yesterday. His media work's been fantastic. I thought the Daily Record hammed it up when they constantly started sentences with the word listen. But Barry starts an awful lot of sentences, a lot of comments with listen. So it's been great fun. What's your take on it, Eric?
Well, kind of like yourselves. I mean, I was in a kind of state of disbelief last week when I saw the rumours coming through that it was going to be Barry taking over as the interim manager till the end of the season. But, to be fair, I was after that. Then I was just in massive anticipation of the game on Wednesday night because I thought, like, geez, I have to see what comes out of this. I really have to see what comes out of this. And look, I can only say that my sides were splitting in the first 20 minutes of that game when Kilmarnock went 2-0. I wasn't laughing so much by the end. In fact, I was fuming because I thought to myself he was going to fall flat in his face in that game. But as appointments go, it's like that was a PR stunt by Paddy Stewart. That's all it was. It was a PR stunt. That was to get the fans on side. It was only designed to calm the fan base down at Ibrox. And while it did that on Wednesday night, it doesn't appear to have carried on too far after that because of what happened yesterday, you know. So, I mean, realistically speaking, this guy is just, he's not qualified for that job. He doesn't have, none of them, none of those guys that they've brought in have the managerial ability or the ability to be a managerial team. Ferguson has managed in the lower echelons and failed. I mean, he's managed Clyde, he managed Kelty Hearts and Alloa, and he fell flat in his face in all of those. Okay, he got Kelty Hearts into the actual SPFL. But outside of that, he has not got the level of experience to be taking that job on. Billy Dodds left Inverness to be relegated. Alan McGregor, Jesus, he has no experience. And then we saw what Neil McCann did at Dundee. He fell flat in his face at Dundee. And he did a pretty poor job as Dundee manager as well. So there is nobody amongst that group other than, is it Issam Karai, who actually has any level, decent level of managing or of management. Mm-hmm. Issam Karai has been assistant manager at three clubs in Belgium, and he managed the Moroccan under-23s for 2 years nearly. So that guy has more footballing or more football management experience than all of them put together as far as I'm concerned. So this is all a PR stunt, which looked to be actually working well on Wednesday night, which has now fallen flat on its face yesterday. Because it was the big homecoming for Baza yesterday and his team of real Rangers men. And outside of that, it was Forces Day, and it was also Captain Disappointment's 500th appearance. Now, the thing about Ibrox is you could actually script the way things are going to fall flat on their face at Ibrox. You could actually script it. I mean, you could have actually foreseen what happened yesterday. And by that I mean that Captain Disappointment on his 500 appearance is dispossessed for the second goal. You know, Barry as manager and his amazing homecoming is beaten on his homecoming. And then it's Forces Day as well, thrown into the mix as well, and they can't win the game. So it's just Comedy Club Sevco. That's what it is. It's just, that's what they do. That's what they've been doing for 13 years solid. And as Bernadette says there, the banter years are never ending. The management dream might not even last until the end of the season. And she's dead right. You know, because to be fair, that's the way it is at Ibrox. And Barry himself said he's worried about the game against Fenerbahce and he's worried about the game at Celtic Park. Well, he's bloody right to be worried. He's bloody right to be worried because the chances are that when he rocks up at Celtic Park, Brendan Rodgers could flay this guy alive. You know, let alone what Jose Mourinho is going to do to him next week. I know we wouldn't say Jose Mourinho is characterized by his flair as a manager. He's always been, you know, fairly defensive as a manager in general. But the chances are that he's probably going to give him a hiding as well. So if Paddy Stewart was trying to, he was taking a serious gamble on this PR stunt paying off, right? And by the time the Ibrox side rolls up to Celtic Park, I think Paddy Roberts could be regretting this PR stunt and the fact that he has brought these boys in. And it's brilliant. It's from my perspective, and I'm sure from your perspective, guys, it's brilliant. Like, I mean, I love it. It's so much content. It just gives me so much content. I don't even have to think about what I want to write about on a daily basis. All I just do, I mean, it's like I did an article the other day that there were six stories on Barry Ferguson. And it was one on Celtic in the Daily Record at that time when I did that article. And I mean, like, you have this kind of annoying distraction off in the background of this team over on the other side of Glasgow in the East End, who are, at that time, they were 13 points ahead. They're now 16 points ahead. They're just a distraction. It's Barry Ferguson. He's box office. It's like the Beatles got back together. That's the best way that you could look at it. It's just, but because it's so hyped up, it's all the better when it falls flat in its face like it did yesterday and in the way that it did. So for me, it's brilliant. I'm loving it. Absolutely loving it. And the longer it goes on, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
A couple of points there. I don't think Paddy Stewart had too much to do with Barry Ferguson. I think it smacks of Douglas Park. I think he's got more say than anyone else at Ibrox. I don't suspect Paddy Stewart's on the ball with Alan McGregor's qualities. And he might have watched Sports Scene and listened to Radio Scotland, but I don't think he was saying, right, Barry, yep, that's great. Bring in Dodgy and me, Neil McCann. So, but if you're a CEO, it ultimately falls in your books. So it comes down to his decision. A couple of touching moments, very emotional yesterday at Ibrox. Before the match, we had John Gregg presenting Tav with something or other for his 500th game. So that was the two captains that have watched Celtic win 9 in a row getting together. So if you're not emotionally taken by that, then you've got a heart of stone. And one other classic, Andy Halliday with his dodgy hair, Captain Motherwell yesterday. Andy Halliday, the new Motherwell manager, looked around the squad. Paul McGinn wasn't there. Stephen O'Donnell wasn't there. So he thought, oh, he could have given it to Lennon Miller, who was captain earlier in the season, but he gave the captaincy to Andy Halliday. 5 years ago, he wasn't good enough for Ibrox, but he was a captain of the victorious team yesterday. So plenty to laugh about, plenty of content for us to write about. If MD's got a problem with that, tough. We like writing about it, and there's quite a big audience for it because you don't really get it on Radio Scotland. You don't get it in the Daily Record, but you'll get it on each of our three sites. So I'm remembering we're looking to get towards 1,000 subscribers. So we were about 900 before we started today. So if you're enjoying the content, please give us a subscribe. Click on the bell icon and you'll get notifications. And likes, comments, shares, all that's all very welcome. So James, I dare say you've had a good giggle or two. You've maybe poured out 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 words here and there. What's been your take on the new manager bounce at Ibrox?
Well, I've got a piece going up tomorrow morning about this. I think there's a certain arrogance in that appointment, which sums up the mindset and the attitude at the whole club. There was an article a few years ago by the left wing John Stone Jones about all these fresh faced young Labour MPs who were like darlings of the London media sect, and they were all being pushed for like high office and all that. One day these guys are going to be cabinet ministers and all that, right? And Owen Jones wrote an article that basically said, if you're one of these guys, you are mad to believe any of this stuff. You guys are far too inexperienced to hold high office. You don't know what you're doing, and you'll be exposed if the media spotlight turns on you properly. And that's exactly what happened. And over a period of time, all these guys just got demolished. The first time they were exposed to serious pressure, they just crumbled under it. And there's a whole trail of these like wrecked careers as a result of believing what they were told, that they were all stars in the making and they were all going to be future prime ministers. And I think about that article every now and again when I hear people talking, when I hear people at Ibrox talking about how easy games should be, or we should never be suffering a result like this. A result like this is unthinkable for this club and all that. But really, it isn't. That attitude's why a result like yesterday is not just thinkable, but is actually more and more coming to be the standard, the usual. There are 8 or 9 of them games every single season, and they still don't get that there is nothing special about them. There's nothing that makes them better than everybody else just because they call themselves Rangers. They call themselves whatever they want, but does not make it so. It does not make it real. The reason that we're successful is that we don't have that attitude, and we don't just assume that we'll beat teams. Rodgers has instilled this discipline in this team that we take every opponent seriously, that for these guys, every game is a cup final because that's how the opposition sees it. They all want to beat us. We're the top team in the country and they all want to beat us. And so Rodgers has made sure that this team never gets complacent, never lets its guard down. We're always aware that the other side is dangerous and they just assume that they only have to turn up. And the whole Ferguson appointment stinks of that kind of arrogance. They genuinely did believe that if they bring in somebody who gets it, who'll treat the rest of Scottish football with contempt, then, you know, they would just start beating teams by 5 and 6 goals. It's mental. It's absolutely mental. They just don't get it at all. They just don't get it. St Mirren gave us a game and a half yesterday. Hibs, the week before, gave us a game and a half. Aberdeen played well in midweek. If you give these teams a chance, they're going to punish you. It's not the same as when you play in Europe, where you definitely get punished for every mistake you make. But this isn't a league of teams that you could just turn up and blow past and no make any effort. And that's what they think they do. That's the whole attitude of the club. There is, as one of your posters just said, a sense of entitlement about them. And appointing guys like Ferguson just plays into that entitlement. It's just, oh, we'll bring in the real Rangers men will come in. They know what it's all about. They'll know. They'll just swat these guys aside. They'll treat them with contempt. I'm afraid that's why it's not going to work. Because you can't treat these teams with contempt. It's ludicrous. It's so stupid. And they don't get it. I think they're going to get a very harsh lesson. And the reality of that before this season ends, I mean, Ferguson was in the paper the day, as you guys said, and he's terrified of the prospect of playing against us in 2 weeks. He's absolutely bought on it already. I mean, a journalist asked him yesterday, if your team found it so difficult to cope with Motherwell, how are you going to cope with Celtic? He says, I've told the players, if we play like this, we will get done. We will get absolutely done. At least we are getting treated with some respect. But it's mad. It's mental. There is nothing that justifies those appointments at all. There's no rationale behind them. There's no reasoning behind them. It's just arrogance and entitlement. That's all it is. And that whole club is run like that now. And I don't see any. And by the way, a takeover, whether it happens or whether it doesn't, I don't see anything changing. The same arrogance and entitlement will still be there. But I mean, one of the dailies today was talking about this idea that Ferguson's going to go in and infuse Rangersness into the dressing room. As the journalist was writing, it said, Eggerman was playing in the Moroccan league last year. He doesn't give a damn about all this cultural bullshit. He doesn't care about any of that. You're not going to make him into a real Rangers man, no matter what you say to him. You're just filling his head with rubbish and he's not going to pay any attention to it. And it means that that new signings just won't take the club seriously. I mean, can you even imagine what it must have been like for a new signing to be taken to the Jimmy Bell Shrine at the training ground? That must have been embarrassing. It's been like, what the hell is this? It's like something from a fucking car boot sale when you want me to take this club seat. Bonkers, it's absolutely bonkers. The whole place is mad. It's insane, absolutely insane. That's why when we heard that Ferguson might get the gig, there was a lot of surely not even they can do something stupid. But yeah, of course he was going to get it. No, who else was going to be the manager? Who else was going to come in and do it? The whole place is mad. The whole place is mental, and it won't change no matter who takes it. That's that club. It's in the DNA of that club now. Insanity is in the DNA of that club. And it has been since they crawled out of the grave of Rangers. It's not going to get any better.
Yep, the sense of entitlement, that's what's drowning them. The more they lose, the more we scalp them, the more that we win, the more trebles they watch Celtic win, the greater the demands that they must get back to some mythical age where they were getting away with murder in terms of registrations and all the rest of it. And they've been moderately successful, has got no appeal whatsoever. The only market for a club from Ibrox is to be dominating and stopping Celtic. So there's plenty of fun to be had in that. But as you were talking there about what Igamani thinks of Barry Ferguson, if anyone has got a leaked video of the halftime team talk at Ibrox, please get in touch with us. When Robin Proper, a fairly refined Dutch gentleman, Yanis Hadji, a young Romanian with delusions miles beyond his ability, and the finest talent to come out of Morocco, Igamani, when Barry Ferguson, Billy Dodds, Neil McCann, and Griggsy are shouting in your face about being a pure biddy man and you can't get beat by Motherwell, this, that, and the next thing, it must be comedy gold. So who knows what... I'm forgetting your man, Sammy, the Moroccan. I wonder what he thought of things sitting in that half-time team talk. Whatever he'd learned in all his coaching courses, I suspect he found something very different at half-time yesterday when they were losing 2-0 to Motherwell. But that's possibly enough on yesterday's hilarity, because a more serious matter, in 2 weeks' time, Celtic have decided to award them 2,400-ish tickets. So we've had none of them since September 22, when Jota chipped one in front of them. Celtic won that match 4-0. We had 800 supporters as target practice at Ibrox for Mickey Beale's first match, a 2-2 draw, with Kyogo scoring a late equaliser. Since then, there's been no away fans at the fixture. But it took them until the 28th of February to come to an agreement for a match on the 16th of March. So that suggests that it wasn't all plain sailing. There was issues there, whether it was ticket numbers, safety or whatever. But my own feelings are it's a backward step allowing this. It might be great for some Celtic fans to be able to go to Ibrox, but there's going to be probably about 3,000 Celtic fans that could have went to the game on March the 16th that wouldn't be able to go to the match. There's going to be increased security. There's going to be issues outside the ground, etc., etc. And we have got ground regulations, a code of conduct for the things that you can, and more importantly, the things that you can't do inside Celtic Park. So the Billy Boys is going to be heard almost constantly, and amongst lots of other poison. So if away tickets were still in place, possibly you'd have stuck with the status quo. But having went down to 0 tickets or 700 tickets, I think it's a massive step backwards. Again, it's good to be at odds with the legacy media outlets who all think this is fantastic news and bringing back one of the top 5 derbies in the world. It is not. Outside of Scotland, barely anyone bothers about it. If you're in mainland Europe on March the 16th, you have a bit of a job trying to find the match. You'll need to go to Celtic Bars. That's a great website. It's been running a while. And you might find somewhere an Irish bar that's showing the match. It is not a great spectacle. It is poison. Wish Celtic had as little association with it as possible. So I made my feelings fairly clear. I'll pass to James for first reaction to this one. James, what's your feelings on 2,400 or thereabouts? I'll not say what I really think about them. Visiting supporters coming to sit at Celtic Park in 2 weeks' time. Over to you, James.
Well, first, I mean, our club's won something of a major strategic victory in getting that many tickets, because they had no intention of ever giving us more than 750. Right? We've had to fight them every step of the way to get more tickets for this game. And I'm glad that the club fought its corner, and I'm glad that the club stood up and this time did more than just talk behind the scenes. because the club has been very aggressive in pursuing its policy on this, and it's done it in a very public way, and I cannot applaud them enough for that. Me personally, I don't want them in our house. I wouldn't have them in our house. And I know that there is an issue there that some of our fans want to go there, and they're entitled to want to do that, and fair play to them. You know, they'll be able to, but I personally wouldn't let them back in. I don't want them anywhere near Celtic Park, because as you guys have said, as some of the guys in the comments have said, the atmosphere's just got to be poisonous and shocking. And if these were your neighbours and they acted like that, you would never invite them into your house. You know, if you want to date that day on your side of the defence, no on your side of the defence. Certainly, you wouldn't allow them to date for your living room. And I just personally speaking, I don't want them anywhere near the place. But the club has a policy on it, and it's pursued that policy very aggressively. What was excellent yesterday was that Rodgers was, on Friday, was that Rodgers was absolutely adamant that he was not going to let the media away with this plague on both your houses, and the club should have sorted this out sooner. He said it. We did nothing here. We didn't do anything here. Right from the start, we told them what would happen if they cut our allocation. It was being discussed at Ibrox for a long time. No one really took it seriously because no one thought it'd be stupid enough to actually do it. Celtic did make the position clear. Whatever you do to us, we will have to do to you. And we will not make it, it won't be in any way like unfair or whatever. You cut ours to 1,000 tickets, we'll cut you to 1,000 tickets. We'll mirror your response exactly. And they still did it. And I think in some ways, the problems that our fans have got getting into away grounds right now are caused by them, are caused by that policy. That decision is what gave the green light to clubs like Hearts and Hibs to say, well, if they're doing this to each other, we can just cut their tickets. We can just cut their allocations for our grounds. Our fans have been clamouring for this for years, so let's just date and see what happens. And we've got the problems that we've got right now in Scottish football with away supports getting cut because of them, because of this situation. And it was a bunch of bollocks that we were getting blamed for it, as if it was somehow our fault as well, as if we caused it, like we provoked it. We did nothing of the sort. They did this to appease a small section of their own fans who were sick and tired of seeing 7,000 yards singing our way through games at their shit pit because we were winning all the time. And they got what they wanted. It's caused massive collateral damage to them and to their supporters. But they got what they wanted. And Celtic had to drag them kicking and screaming towards 2,500 tickets. And so our club has won a victory here. Not the victory we wanted, but it ain't over yet, because we're going to keep pushing for the restoration of the full allocation. Okay, I don't like it, but that's what the club's chosen to do. And I would bet on us getting there. I would bet on us getting there. As one of the posters said, if the numbers that they're going to keep reducing the way they're doing and the number of empty seats at their stadium, we'll have 20,000 there before long. Let alone 7,000. They'll give us two stands just to fill the place. It's a joke that we've ended up here. It's ridiculous. Yeah,
well, I was lucky enough. My first ever game at Ibrox was 82-83, January the 1st, 83. Charlie Nicholas chipped in front of the Broomland Road. And we also had a section. I'm not sure about the govern then, but we certainly had half the enclosure and a good section of the main stand. That's never coming back. I don't think we'll see 20,000 there. But for a generation of Celtic fans, the numbers 2-2, 2-2, 2022 means a hell of a lot. That was the night that Ange Ball came alive. It was 3-0. Ahmed Diallo went AWOL. Van Bronckhorst went AWOL. Captain Disappointed went AWOL. And Borna Barisic sunk to his knees. So, without doubt, for a generation of Celtic supporters, that was the night of nights. That was that's their greatest ever Glasgow derby experience. The greatest Glasgow derby atmosphere. It was crackling that night, and
absolutely
3-0 at half time. Two incredible goals from Hatate, and the icing on the cake when Abada nipped in, left Barisic on the deck, almost popped it away, and then ran over the Green Brigade. I'm not sure we'll be seeing Abada running towards the Green Brigade anytime in the near future. But that's a standout memory for me. So, Eric, what's your take on the developments since 2018. Steven Gerrard came in, he decided to cut down the Celtic allocation. It's been to and fro ever since. And now, in a fortnight's time, there'll be 2,500 of that lot coming to Celtic Park.
Yeah. Something comes to mind after that game in March of 2018 when Odson Edward got that beautiful third goal, and that really sickened him. And that was the catalyst to all of what we're talking about now or dealing with now, right? And it really, I think that whole, the aftermath of that and the actions that they took in the aftermath of that epitomized what really, really sore losers they are, you know, and they just can't handle. Well, they couldn't handle the tankings that we were giving to them at that time. But I'm going to go back even further to May 1999 at Our Ground when they won the title at Our Ground and they beat us 3-0. And if ever there was a time where we should have taken a decision to ban them from Our Ground, it was then, as far as I was concerned, because of the behaviour that went on at that game. The fact that they mocked our huddle, the fact that their fans celebrated the way they did at the ground that time. And what that time in May 1999 did is it proved that no matter how shit things got for us, we took it on the chin.
Yeah.
And we were able to accept the kind of low, what would you say, below the belt digs that they gave us at that time and the way that they behaved. And not only the way they behaved, but the way that the referees behaved as well, when you consider what Hugh Dallas did at that game as well. Even, I know he got a coin in the head and that will go down in infamy, but the fact of the matter is that the way that they behaved at that game should be in the catalyst to us banning them, the 7,500 that we used to allow into Celtic Park at that time, but we didn't. But I bring it back, and I bring it back then to 2018 and the fact that we were lording it over them, and we had been for quite some time, and they just couldn't handle that. And what really sickened me in the aftermath of that was the way that the media basically tried to put all this on our doorstep. And say that we were the ones who, you know, and if I can recollect correctly, at that time, we were talking about still maintaining the 7,500 allocation to them for a bit of time after that decision was made by them. But then we decided, look, we're not going to do that. If they want to treat us that way, then we'll treat them the same. It's just going to be like for like, which you reap what you sow. And that's what happened at that time. The Ibrox side reaped that and they sowed it and they got the same in return. And that's exactly how we played it. And what happened in the aftermath of that is that we have continuously tried to negotiate getting fans back into both grounds. And it's culminated in what we've done now. And I would say that we've been more at the forefront of this than they have. But what I'd also say is that you're 100% correct, Joe, in what you said earlier on, in when you said that, you know, that night when we beat them 3-0, Ange Postecoglou's first game at home, you know, as the Celtic manager against them, that atmosphere was just second to none. It was absolutely crackling. It was brilliant. Best atmosphere ever at Celtic Park. And I've been at games against them, you know, many times at Celtic Park. And back in the 90s, I've been at games. I was at a cup game in 97 where we hadn't beaten them in a couple of years. And the atmosphere was bloody amazing at that game because we'd waited so long to beat them. But the point I'm making is that it just showed that by not having them in the ground and the atmosphere that our fans could generate on a night like that, it meant, I think we all realized that night, we didn't bloody need them there, because all they bring is poison and, you know, dirge and those rotten songs they have in their songbook. So like for me, it's 2,400 of them is 2,400 too many. As far as I'm concerned, at Celtic Park, we don't need them. We don't need their songbook. And you see, the thing is, because of the fact that they know that they get away with that songbook, they're going to come to Celtic Park in that game in a couple of weeks' time, and they're going to absolutely sing at the top of their voices every facet of that rotten, disgusting songbook that they have.
Yeah.
And we should never be subject to that. We should never have to listen to that shit. Especially on our own doorstep. It's bad enough having to put up with it, you know, even just watching it on the television when they're singing it. But to have to listen to that crap on our own doorstep? No. I agree, as a derby, it should have elements of an away support and a home support. And I agreed with that when I didn't know any different You know, and I didn't know any different up until we banned them from our ground for the length of time that we did from 2022 up to this point. And different to me is not having them there. And I much rather Celtic Park when they're not there. And that's my take on it. I don't think it's gonna really do any good having them there. And I think give it one game, which will be in 2 weeks' time, we're gonna be pig sick at the sight of them again back at Celtic Park, because they're going to put on a show. They are going to put on a show for all, and a show that will display everything that is vile and disgusting about their support. And we're going to see it in fucking stereo next March 15th or 16th, isn't it? We're playing them. It's the Sunday the 16th, yeah. So, excuse my language, but it's a touchy subject for me. That's my take on it, Joe.
No, I get it. Yeah. No, I mean, one of the things that...
In 2006, UEFA banned the Billy Boys. They were mm-hmm. sanctioned on it. They get into bother with it. UEFA did a bit of digging into it, and I think the message from the SFA was, well, it's part of Scottish football, and this has been around forever and a day. UEFA said, we're drawing a line on it, and UEFA forced the SFA into banning that song. Typically, it was banned, it was quiet for a couple of years. In the last year or two, you can hear it almost every week. So, Michael Nicholson and took the decision. His mentor, Peter Lowe, I'm sure he was 100% behind it. Celtic Football Club are inviting the Billy Boys back into Celtic Park. There'll be the Billy Boys, there'll be songs about Jockstein, and there'll be lots of other songs. So we can wait to see how Celtic react to this. The status quo wasn't causing any problems. So someone's decided that it's better to have them with us. I think under pressure from Sky broadcasters and all their media partners, but I suspect more than 50% of the Celtic support is quite happy with no support. But the decision's been taken. We can rabble on, we can moan, we can make points. It's not changing. We'll have another podcast next Sunday, and then we'll have one after the match, either on the Sunday or the Monday. James, you've got a few points to add after hearing Mike contribution.
Yeah, well, just to touch on the singing for a minute, you're 100% right to bring up UEFA's action on the Billy Boys, but don't forget how their fans responded to that. They cut that song out of the repertoire and they replaced it with even more grotesque, offensive, scandalous song, the Famine Song, which was so bad, the then chairman took it to the parliaments in Europe, in Westminster, and at Holyrood, and basically got them hounded for it in every corner of the so-called chattering classes when it was being debated in three parliaments, and they had no choice but to cease and desist it. And then UEFA got involved, and UEFA also took them to task for that. But that nothing sums them up more than that. That one song drops out of the playlist, and something even more staggeringly disgusting and offensive replaces it. None sums them up more than that does. But in terms of, I don't know, point you mean, what the hell was I going to say? The club itself, right, the club itself has been an utter disgrace right from the start of this situation. They have moved the goalposts on us. They have tried to screw us over at every opportunity. And one of the most absurd examples was when we came back after the COVID campaign, and I got a phone call for Celtic Park like about 10 days before the game at Ibrox. And the last of Celtic Park was like, right, I need to let you and the rest of the bloggers know what's happened. They've cancelled their tickets, like virtually the last minute. We're about to send the tickets out, and they've cancelled them. And the reason they gave us for cancelling them is that in discussions, they asked us for a guarantee that fans, that their fans would be allowed at Celtic Park. Now, we're in the middle of a pandemic, right? We are very fortunate that we've got fans in grounds at all, but they're asking us for a guarantee that we can't give them. We cannot give them that guarantee. They know we can't give them that guarantee. If the government turns around and decides that we're going to go into another lockdown, there's nothing we could do about that. And we'll have broken a promise to them. We've told them that. We, in all good conscience and all good faith, we cannot guarantee anything at this moment in time. But if it's permitted, your fans will be there. And they still use that as a pretext for cancelling their tickets with like 10 days to go. I mean, that's the level they operate at. It's absolutely shocking. And that's why the relationship between the two clubs is at its absolute worst. And although an agreement's been reached on this, it's an agreement more on our terms than theirs, because we've had to drag them kicking and screaming into this. And we also had to drag, don't forget, we also had to drag the SPFL kicking and screaming into this, because they didn't want to participate in any of the discussions about it. You know, again, we talk about this a lot on here. Governing bodies don't want to govern. Leaders that don't want to lead, they don't want to have to do anything. And because we basically violated the rules and said, your fans only coming to our stadium until this is resolved, that's then and only then did they get involved and put this 4% guarantee in. It's mental. It's absolutely mental. But our club's done the right, for once, our club's done the right thing and it's taken a front foot position on this and it's put its policy out there and it said, this isn't open to negotiation. Either these guys do this in good faith or they can forget it. I mean, don't forget that we had to extend the ban on them because although the two clubs had an agreement to do the same work at the same time on their stadiums, they didn't bother us. They didn't bother their arses, did they? We had all ours done and they didn't even get, they hadn't even started theirs yet. And so we extended the ban for another couple of games. I mean, these are the people we're dealing with. And although there is some hope that maybe if the takeover goes through, the new Ibrox board, the next Ibrox board, may be more rational and sensible and willing to play the game in good faith, I wouldn't count on it. I'm not betting on it.
Because this is the board that hired Barry Ferguson.
That club does things to people. We know that's a fact. You can go in there with the best of intentions and a lot of like positive views and be quite a progressive. And that club does something to people. It warps them. Once they're inside the walls, they get twisted up and they get sucked into the whole culture war thing. It's nonsensical. So I'm not hoping for any kind of change in policy if there's a new border there. It's the same club and they'll act the same way. Because that's what they are.
Right, we'll wrap up our discussion on that lot. I've got to say, lots of good comments come in tonight. So it was a bit of a going into the unknown for us, going on a live show. So good comments in, and we'll be more reactive to them in future episodes. So thanks everyone for the comments. We've still got a few more points to look at. The SPFL, the 55... you can't say that word, that number, without laughing. Absolutely nowhere in the world of sport does the number 55 have any meaning whatsoever, except for in these poisoned quarters. So they thought 55 was something. Yo-ho-ho, we're three wins away from 55. By next Sunday, we turn our attention to the Scottish Cup, the Battle of the Greens, except it won't be the Battle of the Greens because Hibs, I presume, will have to change their strip. So it's the two informed teams in Scotland. Hibs are looking decent. I think they got away with murder from us last week. We were off form and we were up against Alan Muir. We haven't even discussed the SFA and their key match incidents panel and that farce. But the good news is Alan Muir hasn't been involved in the last two rounds of SPFL fixtures. On Tuesday, we'll find out which officials will be involved in the four quarterfinals for the Scottish Cup. So there's four quarterfinals. There's three full-time VAR officials getting a salary out of the SFA. Will they bring back Alan Muir for one of those matches? Or will they try and keep him back for the following week when there's six rounds of matches? But the Battle of the Greens, Eric, what are you thinking next week for Hibs against Celtic, Sunday, 3 o'clock, Premier Sports?
If I'm being honest, I think it's going to be a tough one. And I think that David Gray is due a lot of credit for the job that he has done at Hibs so far, you know, because at the start of his managerial career as Hibs manager, a lot of people kind of, because he did get off to a shaky start. So a lot of people kind of were giving him a lot of stick in relation to the way that Hibs had been playing. And in my own mind, when that was going on, I was kind of thinking, geez, give the guy a chance. He's only just started out. And David Gray is, look, he's Hibs through and through. And I love David Gray because of, you know, what he did in the Scottish Cup final in 2016. So he has a place in my heart forevermore. You know, and he's got legendary status as far as I'm concerned because of that. And I was happy to see him be given the role as Hibs manager, and I really wanted him to succeed. And what he has done is he's made his side very, very hard to play against. Now, as we learned to our own detriment last week, they don't play a really attractive style of football. They get stuck in, and they seem to know how to work the referee in their favour. So we saw that again last week, as it was just stop-start the whole game. It was stop-start, and they know. Martin Boyle's an expert at it, to be fair. He's one guy who can just hit the deck. If somebody throws a feather at him, he can hit the deck, you know. So, yes, we have a fairly tough game coming up against them. And I don't think we're going to have it all our own way. I don't think they're going to make it easy for us. And I would expect it's going to be pretty close. I think we're talking maybe 2-1. There'll be a goal in it. I think it'll be that tight. But having said that, again, they showed. I didn't get to see the game today, but I watched back the highlights, and I've obviously been, you know, James was messaging and saying what was going on. They played very well against Hearts today, and I think they deserve their win against Hearts. And they seem to be getting, as you know, they seem to be getting a bit of momentum up as the premier club in Edinburgh now, which is, I'm delighted to see. And I'll be very happy to see them dominate there in that particular spectrum. But yeah, look, we've got home advantage next Sunday. But I don't think we're going to get it all our own way. I definitely don't think they're going to make it easy for us. And we're going to have to be on our game. But if you look at it from the perspective, we're coming off the back of two games where we scored 5 goals. We're coming off the back of two games where we played really, really well. And we've had it put up to us in both of those games, because to be fair, if Aberdeen had put away a few of their chances in the game midweek, and St Mirren had been a bit more clinical yesterday, could have been, and had they got that penalty, something we haven't actually mentioned today, which I wanted to touch on. And I will say this, and I said it in my article this morning, that was 100% a penalty for St Mirren. And it's scant consolation for Stephen Robinson that the KMI panel will probably say at the end of next week that that was 100% a penalty. That's no fucking good to him now. You know, it's no good to him, the same as it was no good to us to hear that we should have had a goal against Hibs. So instead, can we not just get officials in who can do the bloody job instead of having a KMI panel in place to point out how shite they are at their jobs? Because that's what the KMI panel is doing, because it's showing up how bad the officials in Scottish football are at their job. And like, why do we have VAR? Like, it's a facility that's in place to review something that happens on the field of play. And again, I'm a Celtic supporter, but I will stand firmly behind St Mirren and say, like, they were hard done by yesterday, and they should have had a second look at that. And look, okay, we probably, if they had got that penalty and they had scored that penalty and had gone to 3-3, we probably had enough in the tank to go on and win the game anyway, and it probably would have finished 4-3 or 5-3. But the fact of the matter is, they'll never know. And what Stephen Robinson will find out at the end of next week is that should have been a penalty, because every man and his dog on the street knows that that was a penalty. Yeah. And it epitomises, it really does epitomise the shit standard of refereeing that there is in Scotland at the moment. And I think they were very much hard done by yesterday. So, but I'm going back to us and how we played in those two games and the way we've performed. When it's been put up to us, we seem to have that extra bit in the locker and that extra bit in the tank to go out and win it. And I think that's what will get us over the line next week against Hibs. But I expect it to be a close one. I expect 2-1, 2-0 maybe at a push, but we'll see. And generally, when I give my predictions on the pod, and I have done in the past, I'm never too far off. So I'll put that one out there, and we'll see how it pans out next Sunday. Hopefully, you know, I'll be on the money. So what about you guys? What do you think?
I'm keeping my Gosling prediction. Every time I make one, it's woefully wrong.
On the VAR front, Jim Goodwin's mentioned that Willie Collum will be giving us the VAR show next week, so that's one to look out for. One factor for the game against Hibs next week, they've taken 7,000 tickets. I suspect they won't sell 7,000 tickets, but I can see 5,000, maybe a bit more, But there'll be a bigger away support than we've known for a long time. I don't think that will do Celtic any harm. I'll get the Celtic support up, and that will have an impact on the players. So I'll pass over to James for your thoughts on the Scottish Cup quarter-final with Hibs.
Well, I'm very much looking forward to it. I think we were sort of responsible for our own failure last week, but they certainly played very well. They're certainly on a great run of form. And David Gray's surprised the hell out of me, because I thought that was a crazy appointment. Guy never managed a first-team game of football in his career, and all of a sudden he's manager of Hibs. And like yourself, Eric, I've got a soft spot for the guy. I think every football match that I've watched more than once, it would be the non-Celtic game that I've watched the most. It's like an annual thing for me now. I will hunt it down and like watch it run about Scottish Cup final time. And it's always hugely entertaining, of course.
I'll just replay that goal over and over again and listen to the crowd. Oh, it's just amazing.
God, I can see it in my sleep. but they're going to be a tough opponent. I watched their game today against Hearts, and they were excellent in the second half. The first half, they scored early, and then Hearts equalised within fairly short time, and Hearts kind of dominated the first half, but the second half, they were just excellent. And they thoroughly deserved not just to win the game, but to win it by a few mere goals. And I did not know that this is that it was back-to-back wins against Hearts. It didn't sink in that was the case. I think Greyfriars Bobby was peeing on headstones the last time. That was something that you could rely on with any frequency. But David Gray's worked an absolute minor miracle. And I said in the article I wrote about it earlier, that you've got to give the Hibs board credit and all, because they stuck by their guy and they had complete faith in him, even when it looked as if it was going to be a disaster, because the start was terrible. It didn't look like it was going to get any better. There was no sign of improvement at all. And they resisted the pressure to sack him. They kept their faith with him, and they're getting rewarded for it. If a certain club not far from us behaved the same way, they might be in a better place. But, you know, it's sacking managers has become an annual thing over there. It's not many. Rodgers will have more heads in his mantelpiece by the time he leaves Celtic than any big game hunter anywhere out there. It's going to be a hard game. I'm looking forward to it. Unlike you, I'm not even going to attempt to make a prediction, because my predictions are woefully wrong all the time anyway when I make them on here. And I'll just say that I'm confident that we'll get the result. And I may even be slightly confident that it'll be comfortable, but no, they're a tough side. They'll be a tough side. I'm pleased to see them doing so well, and I'm pleased to see Gray doing so well. It's good. And I think, what are they sitting in third right now?
Because
I know Aberdeen there. Dundee United was the day, and Dundee United were one. I don't know how that game.
And they've only actually lost two more games in the Ibrox side.
Yeah.
So
just a shame they made such a bad start to the season, or they could be sitting and saying.
Exactly. That's what one of our commentators said there as well.
Well, I think Celtic will win by at least two goals next week. Hibs will make it awkward, as St Mirren did, but I think with the league within touching distance, there'll be a real focus for the Celtic squad this week in training to get this game done and dusted. So, I mentioned earlier, we're getting close to that silly number 55. Winner next three matches, and it's definitely there. Possibly our next two, because if we do what we suspect we might do against Barry's boys in a fortnight's time, it might be a bit tricky for them the next fixture. But I'll pass to James for a preview as Celtic zoom in on the 55, as it's known in Scotland.
Well, sitting in the pub last night, we were trying to work this out, work it when the league decider would be. And I actually initially thought it was going to be Hearts, but unfortunately we'll beat St Johnstone at Perth, the way it is looking. So it's up to Celtic and St Johnstone to get together right now and start talking about that game, because they could sell that stadium 10 times over, and it will just make no sense whatsoever if there are thousands of empty seats while thousands of Celtic fans want to attend it. It will just make no sense at all. So the two clubs need to get together right now and sort that out and decide what the arrangements for it are going to be, because we can't leave it till the last minute. It is looking increasingly likely that'll be it, because let's be honest, Barry and his Buckfast Brigade are not going to stand in our way in 2 weeks. There's just no way. It's the one game that we can afford to be a little bit complacent about, right? Because I think they're so bad and we're so good right now. We'll just swat them aside in front of a home crowd. But that sets up the title party, and Perth is not the ideal place. I think a lot of what was getting said last night in the pub was like a lot of wistful thinking after a lot of booze. We can get to enjoy it at home and all that. It'll be against Hearts, will we? No, it's not going to be against Hearts. Unless, and of course this is not completely out of the question, unless that weekend they slip up again, which, let's face it, we know they are certainly more than capable of doing, because if we're at home, they must have an away game. Don't know who it's against, and I don't know whether it's before we play Hearts. But that might give us an opportunity when it's Celtic Park. But it's looking like Perth. So Perth it shall be. We will go there and win it. And it feels like a significant one this time. Yeah, you don't know that the other ones haven't been, but this feels like one that's going to alter the firmament a wee bit, because we've already overtaken the big lie in terms of the trophies. If we're going for 56, and then they're still in the same hapless state they're in, I think most of them will have conceded it before a ball's even kicked. This feels like a significant one. This feels like a big, big title to get over the line. I'm just looking forward to staying. And it really doesn't matter where we're there, as long as we're there. And it's looking increasingly like it will be very soon. I mean, nobody, I don't think anybody foresaw us being this far ahead. Even a few months ago, I don't think anybody foresaw us being this far ahead when we can win it, what is it, 2 games before the split? Which is mental, absolutely mental. That's how good we've been this season. That's how consistent we've been, that we can be seriously talking about winning the league 2 games before the split. This is excellent. What a credit it is to the team and to the manager.
Absolutely. I've not checked out their fixtures, but if we win the Glasgow Derby, it's 19 ahead with 8 to ahead. Go. I'm not sure the fixtures Saturday, Sunday when we play Hearts at home, but we certainly play St Johnstone on the Sunday, so that would give them 2 opportunities to lose the league, whether it's on the weekend that we play Hearts or.
Of course, I never even thought of that. You know that? Never even thought of that. The title party could be the league.
It could be that the league's won without us kicking a ball, technically. But Eric, what's your thoughts on 55 before we wrap up for this week?
Yeah, well, the number I have to call out right now is 100, because we have 100 on the live stream, which is very good for our first live stream. I'm very, very happy with that. And thanks to everybody who's tuned in. And the comments have been great. So it looks like we have, a good core crew who are very happy and interested in what we do. So, in terms of 55, there's, going back to what James said, this is a significant one because there's a big element of karma in this one, you know? Karma's a bitch.
It really
is.
And
I will hearken back to September 2016 at Ibrox when we saw all those banners going up, hashtag going for 55. And I remember looking at that and saying to myself, what the fuck is 55? What? How is a club that has only been alive for 4 years going for 55? What's that? So the arrogance and the hubris that was involved in that whole campaign.
Yep.
It's taken, we'd say, 8 years now. To 9 years it will be by the time we wrap up this title, which there's no doubting at this stage we will do, to come around to this. And 8 years ago it was a number that meant nothing to me. It meant nothing to Celtic fans, and nobody really counted titles. It wasn't until the glib and shameless liar decided that it was a number of significance that it has now taken on a very big significance. for Celtic supporters. So this year we're going to equal 55. Next year we'll be going for 56. And 8 years ago, we wouldn't have given a shit about numbers and titles, and nobody ever counted titles until the glib and shameless one decided that they should be counted. So yeah, there is a very significant element to this one of karma and satisfaction. I'll take a great deal of satisfaction. What does, however, disappoint me is the fact that I expected more fight from them for this one. And the fact that they didn't fight, and they have put up their weakest defense, or attempt at defending, you know, it's not even a defense because they're not defending anything, but they've put up their weakest challenge to us since they came back into the top flight. Or no, they didn't come back into the top flight. Sorry. That didn't happen. they came into the top flight in 2016 as a new club coming into the top flight. Okay. So we'll say their fans came back into the top flight. Okay. Because they're the same fans. We know that. They're not the same club. But the point I'm making is, they've made something out of this that it never needed to be. So that's why we'll take great satisfaction out of it. And that's why it's just rubbing it in their face. And it epitomizes everything that they do, where it just falls flat. They fall flat on their face. They fell flat in their face yesterday. It's you know, the whole Barry Ferguson homecoming thing. He fell flat in his face yesterday. They fell flat in their face in Forces Day, you know. Captain Disappointment gave the ball away in his 500 appearance for a goal to be scored against them. It's just what they do. They're serial failures, serial losers. And when we get title 56 and pull, we're going to pull two trophies clear of them when we wrap up this title in a few weeks' time. And I would expect, barring a catastrophe, that we might go three ahead of them. But for me, 55 is, I wouldn't have cared about it before, but it's going to be good. It's going to be sweet. Very, very sweet. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and I will celebrate it with great aplomb.
Right. Well, we got a very informative comment from an old school friend of mine, Paul McCann. So when we play Hearts on Saturday, the something, 23rd, my arithmetic teachers wouldn't be so happy here. The 16th and 7 would be to 23. So on the 22nd, we play Hearts at 3 o'clock, and they're at Dundee at 5:30. So if we beat Hearts, they'll have to win at Dundee to keep the fight alive. So that could be the decider. And then I guess they'll play at home on the Saturday before we go to St Johnstone on the Sunday. A couple of small points, but very relevant. If we win the league, it'll be the 55th time we've won the league on our own. We haven't shared any with Dumbarton. No, not one. All of our leagues have been won by ourselves. Plus, all of our league titles have been won with the handicap of paying Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs. And before that, the Inland Revenue, in full, the deductions from the players' and management's wages. So there's absolutely no comparison. It's one club since 1888. They're going for 55th title. It's not two clubs, and we've never shared a title with Dumbarton. But that's enough. I've got off the soapbox. So it's been a great episode tonight. Probably ran a little bit longer than anticipated, but no problem with that. We never struggle for content. So thanks to everyone that threw in the comments, especially Paul McCann with that information about the Dundee 5:30. So after the Hearts game, I think all eyes will be on. That seems like a Premier Sports kickoff. So Phil Clement had a few problems with Dundee last season. He didn't like their pitch. Well, I know the Dundee manager will certainly he gives it his best shot whoever he's playing against. But Dundee will certainly have something to play for, and he'll be going all out for it. So we'll round up for now. So if you've enjoyed our content, please subscribe. And when you subscribe, click on the bell icon and you'll get a notification for next week's show. Please give us a thumbs up. Please give us a comment. If it's positive, if it's not, be off. And share it as well. So that's enough comment. It could go on forever and ever. But thanks to James. Thanks to Eric. Next week, James will be hosting. So we rotate it along. It's the Trinity Terms, and we split the load. So that's all for now. Thanks a lot. And I don't know how we do our signing off because we're going live now, but we'll catch you again next week, and hopefully we'll be progressing the Scottish Cup to report on. Cheers.
Okay. Good luck, folks, and thank you. Bye-bye now.